since 1960 in the center of the FM dial. Take your time and make a contribution by calling our pledge line right now at 212-209-2950. Stay tuned for the Gary Null Show.
Gary Null Show, and now your host, Gary Null.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're here to talk about how to live a longer and healthier life, and happier life. First up, from Tufts University comes a study that researchers find that brains with more vitamin D function better. An estimated 55 million people worldwide live with dementia, a number that's expected to rise as the global population ages. But in the United States, growing up as a baby boomer, I never met anyone with dementia because most people didn't live long enough to develop dementia. A lot of people died of diabetes, stroke, and heart attacks and cancers in their 50s and 60s. You were considered really old if you lived to be 70. But now we're finding a phenomenon because of our lifestyle, because of the quality of the choices we make, a lot of refined and processed foods, too much protein from animals, not enough water in our diet, we're dehydrated, and a lot of things that cause inflammation. From moderate amounts of alcohol, even small amounts of alcohol, creates, unfortunately, the capacity for our cells to be destroyed in huge numbers. One simple glass of alcohol, let's say if you had one that you would see like bourbon advertised on television, that could kill a million brain cells, liver cells, kidney cells, heart cells. And when you're young, you won't notice it. The next day you feel fine. But as you age, those cells are not coming back. So we have to understand that the longer a cell lives, the longer we live. And every cell has a biological clock. It's called a telomere. And so the longer the telomeres, the longer that particular organ lives. So we should do all we can to try to lengthen the telomeres. Exercise, healthy plant-based diet, not exceeding the caloric input that we should have so we don't gain weight. These are all things that are easy, not difficult, if we make them a part of our lives. Well, so when you realize that Americans are now the baby boomer population are really showing dementia in large numbers, that's not good. And that can go up by at least 20 million more people over the next, let's say, 10 years. Who's going to take care of them? If you have a relative, mother or father, that you're taking care of, you know that it's all-consuming. And it's really challenging, and it burns people out. So we have to have a whole new approach to dementia and Alzheimer's. I'll be sharing insights in how you can deal with these, prevent them, or if someone has them, how you can improve their condition on an upcoming webinar. It's what to do when the brain stops functioning as it should. That'll be in about a month from now. It'll be about 6 hours long, but that'll help a lot of people. So what do we do? Well, one thing we can do is realize that you need vitamin D. Why? Because when Tufts University had completed the first study examining levels of vitamin D in brain tissue, specifically in adults who suffered from varying rates of cognitive decline, which can start in your 40s, they found that members of this group with higher levels of vitamin D in their brains had better cognitive function. The studies was published in Alzheimer's and Dementia, the peer-reviewed journal. So let's just summarize. We need vitamin D for our immune system, for our heart. But now it's showing we need it for the brain. In fact, if you have a strong immune system, then you've got adequate amounts of vitamin D. If you don't have an adequate, then your immune system's not going to work on your behalf. It also helps you maintain healthy bones. And you can get it from fatty fish. You can get like salmon, wild salmon. You can fortify it. It can be an orange juice. You can take a tablet. You can get it from sunlight, which is one of the best ways of getting it. So no matter how you get it into your system. Now you know that in the Russian Memory and Aging Project, a long-term study of Alzheimer's disease that began in 1997 at Rush University, they assessed cognitive function of the participants, older people with no signs of cognitive impairment as they aged, and analyzed irregularities in the brain. Once again, vitamin D. The more you have, the better your brain function. The less you have, the more problems you have with your brain. Another study, and this one is about reading for pleasure, strengthens memory in older adults. This is from the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology. A team of researchers at the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology have uncovered yet another good reason to love reading. It may help preserve memory skills of people as their brains grow older. Their work is reported in Frontiers in Psychology. And one of these mental abilities is episodic memory, or memory for events, which allows us to remember what happened in previous chapters of a book and to make sense of the ongoing story. Another ability is working memory. Working memory is the capacity to hold things in our minds as we engage in other mental processes. Working memory helps us keep track of things that happened in recent paragraphs as we continue reading. Both episodic memory and working memory tend to decline as we get older. But habitual reading routinely practices and creates the skills in different contexts. So, keep reading. And I, as an author of over 900 articles and over 100 books, and some of the longest books ever published, including 1,600 pages, the book for women only, and over 1,200 pages for Get Healthy Now, I can tell you that people think, oh, this is too big a book to read. Just take sections at a time and read them. And then ask yourself, what did I learn? Now, I have a little technique that I do that helps me. Hopefully, it'll help you. Let's say that I'm watching this program right now, or I'm video streaming it, because historically, when people listened to you on the radio, they would listen to the cadence in your voice, the quality of the tone, whether you're hyper or agitated or talk very quickly or slow, and people became accustomed to that, and they would look forward to it, and then they would see how they would listen to what you were saying and how they could remember things you were saying. All this was part of this relationship. Now people want to see you as well. And that's why I'm video streaming this. And just this health and nutrition segment will go all over. It'll go on sites such as Rumble and Odyssey and other sites as well. And on PRN.live and GaryNall.com. So once you see someone speaking, you create a visual relationship, and then you hear hear what they're saying. You create an audio relationship. Combine the two together. And now you have a relationship. You're not just a listener or a viewer. And then depending upon the quality of what is said, if what I'm saying is meaningful, if it's reasonable, if it's something you can use, then it's not just a distant, anonymous viewer or listener. You begin to create a relationship. Well, I'm going to tune into Gary today because every day has something different. Never repeats himself. Different information, all from good peer-reviewed journals. So it's not a question, is it legitimate? It's, will I use it? Do I need it? Do I want it? So, for example, there's a study from University of Lagos in Nigeria. It's about mangoes and how powerful they are as a natural antidepressant. Well, I like mangoes, but I'm also depressed. I'm functionally depressed, you say, of yourself. I can work. People can see me smiling on the outside. They don't know the pain in my heart. They don't know what I'm feeling. They don't know how I'm perceiving the world and all this happening and how crazy everything seems. Everything's upside down. Those who say that they are against fascism are now the fascists. Those who say, historically, we fought for your freedom of speech, even if we don't agree with your freedom of speech, now don't want anyone to have freedom of speech except them. So everything's crazy. We go into a country to promote democracy and freedom, and yet we destroy the country. So everything is its opposite today. And people just don't know how to handle that. So what if you explain things, starting with something as simple as mangoes? A mango a day can help keep depression at bay. Ah, well, if you're depressed, you have a need. And if that information helps you with your need, then you have a quality relationship with information. And if you see that there are other topics like, I do more programming on the environment than any radio program in American history. And if you go back and look at all the programs I've done, the videos I've done, the award-winning documentaries, the most award-winning documentary in the world in the independent and international film festivals was Last Call for Tomorrow. It was 3 years ago, and 3 years and 2 years ago, 2 years straight, hundreds and hundreds of awards. Why? Because people were at the right time to pay attention because there were so many things going wrong. Once in a 500-year event was happening three times in a year. Right? So suddenly it said, wow, this is information we need to know. Am I in the right place? Will I be able to sustain my existence living here versus living somewhere else? How bad is it? Because so much of the information in the media is superficial and frequently biased. This information is definitive, scholarly, but in lay terms, and it's no bias, no politics in it. So then you create more than just information you can use. You create a relationship, and that relationship is one you can trust. And that's why we have such a huge audience for so long. Remember, when I was first doing my radio program, I did a radio program on what was mainly for people who were concerned about literature. And it was called Writers Forum. 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. Why? Because no one else was having writers on to talk about topics that the average person wasn't interested in. They were interested in watching celebrities on television talk about their new movie or television show or something. So it was a unique fit. It hit the sweet spot. A lot of Americans grew up reading, and now everything was television and commercials. And yet they yearned for the written word. So I bring on the finest writers in the world, Pearl Buck, Norman Mailer, Arthur Miller, all of them were on my program because I was the only show doing it. And so it was filling a need and a relationship. And so then later, when I went on WMC radio, health was an important issue. And especially young people, not the older people, younger people were interested in health. Exercise and veganism was coming in. Vegetarianism was a big thing. And fighting the establishment where the establishment was wrong and having a more progressive view towards health. creating a peace and prosperity for the working class. And so that's what was my programming. Went along, we had 2,000 quarter-hour listeners in the middle of the afternoon. Nobody listened. But when young people started passing word of mouth, because there was no advertising, the audience grew until it became the number one radio program in America in the afternoon, of all 5,000-plus stations, dwarfing Sally Jesse Raphael, Larry King, all the people who were on MCA at that time, Barry Farber, Barry Gray, etc., Steve Powers. And it was a young audience. I was in my early 20s. My audience was in their 20s, too. Now, imagine what happens when you're in your 20s, your audience is in your 20s, you're running marathons together, you're training together, you're having covered dish dinners together with 1,600 people out in a parking lot at a mall because there was not enough room in the restaurant that you originally thought would be there. People Magazine does a four-page spread, Time Magazine, New Mr. Natural, New York Times Sunday Supplement, helping a man with end-stage emphysema named Harry Beal reverses end-stage emphysema that had never been done. Suddenly, young people start to see, let's connect on many different levels, exercise, environment, health, de-stressing, positive attitude, and that's how it evolved. Well, guess who's around today? Those same people. The people who began listening when they were young in the 60s, 70s, and then more in the 80s and 90s, and their children in the 2000s. So today, I have a lot of young people. The average age of my audience, according to the last survey I got, was my particular audience was 37-year-old female college graduate listening at home in the evening. All right? So what you have to do is you have to wake up each day and say, what do I need in my life today to make it better, to help me overcome crisis, to get me through an issue so my life is not one constant drama of struggling? And so broadcasting, not just my program, but the Progressive Radio Network and all the other networks and WBI, we must focus upon what are the real needs of the audience. And that's what you should program. So program directors, stop thinking in Pacifica that this is 1967 and this is a revolution. Those programs don't have an audience, and that's why there is no one listening on those stations. They're dying. They won't die because they have their licenses. But think about all the needs that people have that are not being addressed. Think of a program on retirement. Think of a program on loss of a loved one. Well, we all go through loss. Where are there people there to meet that need? Think of a program on what to do with the savings that you have if you're an average person. What about a program on the working class? No, everybody's chasing the young person as if those young people are the ones that have all the money. No, just the opposite. The people most likely to listen to a program and support it are older people who value family, their faith. They value their culture. They value their neighborhood, their community, and they value the legacy, the positive legacy of what has been achieved in their lifetimes and before them. For those people, especially younger people, the woke generation, they're looking at what they're angry about. They want everything to meet their needs. They expect universities and colleges to be places that are comfortable and safe and wonderful, just like at home, the bubble they grew up in. And exactly, even having a gigantic audience of those young people like TikTok has, what good does it do? It's just a distraction. It's a visual freak show. So give me the more mature person with a mind that is more focused upon solutions than becoming a victim. And that's what we have. So whether it's mangoes or what to do that will help with the environment, or whether it's what kind of changes to deal with stress so you're not creating cortisol and creating a stroke, that's what we focus upon. And that's why we're now sending this out. Share it if you find it a value with your own life. But every day I'm going to be coming back and sharing something that can help you with your needs. For example, from the Missouri University of Science and Technology comes a study about prevention and reversal of selenite-induced cataracts by N-acetylcysteine. NAC is an essential, very essential nutrient. It helps people with mental problems. It helps with the brain chemistry. Helps with heart problems, especially irregular heartbeat. Yes, it's a multitask nutrient, but now it helps with cataracts. How about that? Who would have thought? It's an amine. And now they're using eye drops in reversing the cataract formation induced by sodium selenite in this laboratory experiment. So something new, something important. And always keep it fresh, whether it's a relationship or the environment you live in or the work that you do. Keep creating it. Make it more interesting today than it was yesterday. And finally, from the University of Tokyo and also De La Salle University in the Philippines, virgin coconut oil protects your neurons from damage and death after a stroke. Now, hyperbaric oxygen should be the very first thing everyone gets who's had a stroke. It protects you from further damage, gets you back to health quicker. Now, researchers showed that hypertensive rats that were taking virgin coconut oil protected their neurons from damage and death due to strokes. Just one of the latest new things that's out there. Just a tablespoon of coconut oil each day in your smoothie. That's the latest on health and healing. And again, every single day, brand new information, always quality studies from peer-reviewed journals that are inexpensive and easy to apply. The more of these that you find that you need and you apply, the longer you're going to live, the healthier you're going to be, and the more you're going to have a strong immune system protect you. Just remember, you can go to prn.live. You can hear my program, download it from the archives, but we have Ralph Nader. We have BD Cohan. If you're depressed, if you're anxious, if you're dealing with crisis emotionally, BD's program helps. We have Abby Martin giving you the cutting edge of what's happening around the world, especially the people who have been repressed and people who have been put upon. And she takes the side of the person who is being oppressed and challenges the oppressor. She's a unique voice. And we have all these other people, Jimmy Dore, taking on issues and challenging the establishment. So we have over 80 individual voices all working towards presenting the truth. That's what makes them progressive. Progressive is not a political moniker. It's been used and abused. Rather, it's individuals seeking the truth, not simply an alliance with a political ideology. And so that's always empowering, always with solutions in mind. And it's free. Go to prn.live. And for my own articles and video clips, go to garynall.com. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I have a good variety of clips today and issues. Please feel free to call in and share your points of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. I'm going to begin with showing you something that there is virtually no discussion, no mention in the American media, in fact, the Western media at all. one of the leading scientists and physicians in Japan, a Professor Masori Fukushima, Professor Emeritus at Kyoto University, warns directly across from him the Japanese Minister of Health about the harms of the COVID-19 vaccine. I think this is important because the Japanese scientists and physicians tend to be rather conservative about sharing information that will challenge the establishment. So when you have one of the most prominent and respected scientists, educators in the entire country, and who is highly revered, if you go over to our website, you can watch this. If not, I'll voice over so as it's happening, you can see it. But if you want to watch this in real time, you'll simply go to PRN.live, click on Shows, then click on All Show Archives, and you'll see Gary and All's show art notes, and then you can watch it. So I'm going to read it, but you should see the intensity in this gentleman's face. I mean, he's doing something that's unusual. Generally, at these meetings, it's rather emotionally low-key. You know, they don't expect people to be, aggressive in any way. He's extremely aggressive. He's at the point of pounding the table. And you'll see about 25 different scientists and public health officials sitting around this table. And so he's calling it out. And this is the response. Here's what he's saying. So I'm going to play the clip right now. He says, this vaccine was scientifically misconstrued. Let's turn down the audio so it doesn't override my voice here. This vaccine was scientifically misconceived. And I immediately translated the Chinese guidelines as soon as they arrived from China to use. The steroids are appropriately as possible, so I announced it. However, the Japanese doctors are excellent, so I soon realized that the steroids needed to be used constantly. I realized the guidelines around June, after which the death rate dropped. So anyone inciting this vaccine without any academic acumen, it is to be condemned. The harm caused by vaccines is now a worldwide problem. Recently published this peer review article you should read, given the large number of deaths and given the wide range of adverse events, billions of lives could ultimately be in danger. We urge public health agencies to acknowledge or substantiate the issues raised in this document that are relevant to the public health, recognize them and act accordingly, and ensure that all individuals make their own decisions on the matter. Medical assistants using this information is a contributing factor in their decision making. We encourage you to make your own health care decisions. I've translated the full text of this document. And one more thing, half of them died of cardiovascular and heart problems after vaccination. I'm sure you know this all too well. Alpha, beta, gamma, what idiocy. A bunch of incompetent scholars who cannot be called scholars, a total disregard of science and medicine. This should never happen again. We are a country of science and technology, aren't we? What the hell? By ignoring science and medicine, look what you're doing. The system is collapsing. In fact, don't look at how many sudden cardiovascular deaths there are. Look at that many. Everyone who has received this vaccine is at risk. Nearly 2,000 people died. He's talking about in Japan. But I think this number is much larger. Don't overlook written reports if anything is found in an autopsy, what you are doing. You can't help but want to hide it. This is a case of drug harm. Mr. Kawada suffered greatly. Therefore, we will This country has learned its lesson about drug harm and has become a country that will never suffer drug problems again. But you forcefully ignore it, and you spend trillions of yen importing vaccines for this country and citing the populations. So it's not good at all. Last year, I thought it would be a problem if this vaccine were used, and I decided it was delusional to think a vaccine would fix the pandemic. In professional magazines, the misunderstanding has finally come to light, and now it is understood. This is a danger. Wrap the RNA into nanoparticles. Every cell engulfs it, and the cells transform. That is what I know now. The mechanism is clear. Immediately dissolve the evolution committee and investigate all cases. And all those who have fallen ill after being vaccinated should not delay informing them in medical institutions. Don't be slow. Not sure what will happen. Cardiovascular disease, autoimmune disease, susceptibility to infection. That's what's going to happen to your brain. Yes. The nanoparticles are absorbed by the brain. A stupid scientist would not allow this and say it's okay. I mean, I'm not a fool. I can suppress the natural immunity. That's why I didn't get the vaccine, because those who got the vaccine, they had all kinds of problems. However, due to vaccination, natural immunity has been suppressed. This is what happened. I don't think it will subside at all. I will spread more and more. It will spread more and more to the unvaccinated from the vaccinated. The people who have disease rights, not right now, let's see, the data presented by the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare speak for themselves. I delivered them all, meaning scientific reports, to them. And that's what he had to say. Now, so he's talking directly to the top person in his country, the Anthony Fauci in his country, and he is one of the most respected scientists in his country, and he is saying verbatim that the vaccines are dangerous and shouldn't be used at all, that now that we know how the vaccine works in the body, it should never have been used. Natural immunity, letting people get sick with it and working on their immune system with natural immunity was what we should have done. And even when we were offering steroids, the steroids were bringing down the death toll tremendously. And he talked about how excellent Japanese doctors are and that they believe in medicine and science, but what they've been given by the heads of the department is not science. It's not of an academic acumen, and it's to be condemned. The harm caused by vaccines is now a worldwide problem. And then he shows a peer-reviewed article explaining in detail how everything that we were told about the vaccines is its opposite. It's wrong. And so he's speaking out. I just want to share that with you because you're not going to learn that anywhere else, because no one else will do this, meaning will have a top academic scientist and physician share the truth with you, because that could spread to others. Separately, this is interesting. The DeSantis group, including the Surgeon General of Florida, will hold COVID-19 vaccine manufacturers accountable. Thus far, they're the only state to do that. Now, they're going to have to show malice. They're going to have to show the vaccine makers knew that it was dangerous, knew people were getting a myocarditis and Bell's palsy and Guillain-Barré syndrome, knew this and kept this from it. And I believe that that's an easy case to make, since none of this was given in the initial information that was distributed to the news media and the scientific community. This had to be gotten by outside, independent, non-vaccine groups, lawyers, under freedom of information. Then a judge had to come in and insist that it be given, because the FDA, lapdog that it is, corrupt agencies that it is, at top to bottom, they sided with the manufacturer. The information on what was in the vaccines exactly and what side effects were seen in the trials, that those individuals, that should be kept secret for 75 years. 75 years. We'd all be dead in 75 years, assuming you're adult now. So they lied about everything. Well, now DeSantis, working with the Attorney General in Florida and others believe that they can challenge the legitimacy of the indemnification of the manufacturers and everyone associated with it. So this is going to be interesting to see where this goes. But at least it's starting, and at least leading scientists are calling it out. And I think that's very important. Just, you know, something that we wouldn't know otherwise, but now we do. And also, I want to go to another clip here. And this clip, the clip we're going to show now, is it's about all the misinformation. Every single day, all day long, in all the media in America, about how Ukraine is winning the war and all we need is more money sent to them. And yesterday I saw the defense budget, which is $20 billion more than what the Pentagon asked for. The Defense Department didn't ask for this much. He's giving them more. Why? Because this is money that's going to go to Ukraine. Is it accounted for? No. Did Zelensky just select BlackRock to handle its investments? Yes. It was reported in the news media. And is it true that the cryptocurrency king, the young guy who's now should be indicted but hasn't yet, and now what you're seeing is money went from him to the Democratic Party and Joe Biden, tens of millions of dollars. They then sent that off to Ukraine. Ukraine then starts investing in cryptocurrencies. Wow, interesting coincidence, right? But if Zelensky has money to invest in cryptocurrency, if there are enormous numbers of Ukrainian leaders buying mansions in Monaco, in the south of France, in the Swiss Alps, and paying cash, if weapons are being found all over Africa that were shipped by the United States and its allies to Ukraine, and nothing is being done about it in any country, it's as if we don't want to know where the money went, much like with Afghanistan. Remember the big, gigantic cargo plane that held whole skids of cash, billions of dollars? All of it went missing, all of it. To this day, nobody knows where it went, who got it. But you don't steal billions of dollars in cash and not have a paper trail. Well, there are paper trails, but we don't care about that. So here's the question I've got for you. Who can tell us the truth about what's going on in Ukraine, the truth of it? Colonel McGregor, yes. But also Scott Ritter, yes. Here is Scott Ritter telling you exactly what's happening in Ukraine and why the information that we're being getting is misinformation and the truth of what's actually happening.
Well, first of all, let's talk about the numbers that the distinguished head of the European Commission put out there. I think that they are wrong numbers. I think they're low. I think they're numbers that are reflective of the official dialogue that takes place between the Ukrainian government and their European, NATO, and American allies. But we have to remember that Ukraine is one of the most corrupt nations on the planet. There's a petition that has been signed by Ukrainian wives and mothers that are asking for the status of upwards of 320,000 men. They want to know where they've gone, what's happened to them, why aren't they riding home, why aren't they phoning home. These are missing. That's a lot larger number. And I think the wounded also are significantly larger. I think the Ukrainians are suppressing the truth of the losses. They're horrendous. I mean, 100,000 is mind-blowing, but you know, I'm here to tell you right now, I think the number is probably closer to 250,000. And then you can extrapolate the wounded. And it's only going to get worse as this war unfolds, as Russian reinforcements arrive, as Russia begins significant offensive combat operations against a Ukrainian military that has been significantly degraded over the last couple of months. I use as a historical analogy the destruction of Army Group Center. That's the destruction of a German army group On the Soviet front in the summer of 1944. But we can also liken it to Operation Cobra, where the Americans and the British broke out of the Normandy bridgehead and drove the Germans back in pell-mell defeat. It was a slaughter of German troops on both sides. And I'm fearful for the Ukrainian people that we're going to see a similar slaughter of Ukrainian troops in the not-so-distant future.
Well, these numbers are... I was going to say Second World War type numbers, but actually they're closer to First World War casualty figures, aren't they?
Well, I mean, Second World War had battles that produced significant losses, but you're right. You know, we're looking at some battles right now that, you know, upwards of 1,000 men are dying a day, and that's World War One type numbers. You know, they're dying in trench warfare. They're dying under artillery bombardment. There are Ukrainian soldiers that are going to the front thinking that they're going to close with and engage the Russian enemy in close combat. And they spend their entire tour under artillery fire, never once seeing the Russians and seeing upwards of 60 to 70% of their unit killed or wounded before they're eventually withdrawn, totally demoralized in an effort to regroup. And that's World War One type combat.
We keep learning that inventories of armaments in the NATO countries are at rock bottom. Some countries refuse to give requested military aid to Ukraine because that would leave them literally defenseless without weapons to defend their own country. The Financial Times, of all people, this week said that one of the least predicted outcomes of the war so far is that the Russians have demilitarized NATO by forcing them to expend almost all of the weapons inventory that they had. What are the Ukrainians doing with these weapons?
They're dying. They're receiving these weapons. They go into combat, and these weapons get destroyed. The men manning the weapons get killed. In the case of the artillery pieces, Ukrainians, fire off as many rounds as they can. And, you know, during the Gulf War, the United States military, this is 1991, we fired 60,000 rounds of artillery for the entire conflict. The Ukrainian military is firing upwards of 20,000 rounds a day. When we provide them with NATO standard 155 millimeter artillery pieces like the M777, the M109, and others, they use this NATO standard ammunition. But NATO hasn't planned for expenditures of this rate. I mean, I don't know what NATO has been doing for the last 20 years, but they obviously haven't been planning for a large-scale ground conflict in Europe, despite articulating that Russia was somehow the threat worthy of the enlargement of NATO. The United States produces around a quarter of a million 155-millimeter rounds per year. Much of that's used for training, and the rest of it's used to keep stocks up to date as they retire expired ammunition. When you provide the Ukrainians with, say, a quarter of a million rounds of ammunition, we might think that that's going to last several months. The reality is it lasts 2 weeks, and then the Ukrainians need more. And after a while, we don't have any more to give. There's some talk in the media that the British Army, which, by the way, I just want to make the following point. The World Cup is going on right now, and you have many stadiums that can seat, 100, 110 plus thousand people. You could put the entire British Army in a soccer stadium and still have about 40,000 seats free. So the British Army, as small as it is, will run out of ammunition in 2 days in a large ground combat, 2 days. The American Army would probably run out of ammunition in 2 weeks. NATO, this is war losing numbers, meaning that if NATO were ever to engage in a conflict with an enemy like Russia, and you run out of ammunition against an enemy that uses artillery to dominate the battlefield, it's game, set, match, Moscow from the start. NATO was never able to fight Russia in its modern configuration, its post-Cold War configuration. NATO isn't organized, equipped, or trained to fight Russia, but now they don't have the logistic sustainability to do it even in a fantasy scenario. So what this is doing, I think this war is actually doing NATO a favor, because it's allowing NATO to understand that if it goes to war, it will lose. It will lose decisively. So maybe don't go to war. This is the thought that should be in the head of everybody who wears a uniform in NATO today, that we should tell our diplomats to stop talking about aggressive posturing towards Russia, because the last thing NATO wants, needs, or even can survive in is a meaningful conflict with Russia.
I'll come to the politicians in a minute, but one of the reasons why I asked you that question, and thanks for that incredible, powerful answer, is that President Buhari of Nigeria says that there's evidence in his possession that weapons that were given to Ukraine are showing up in the Chad Basin in the hands of Islamist throat-cutting madmen of the likes of Boko Haram and other Islamist groups who are to be found in that Chad basin. And if the president of Nigeria is correct, then it would seem that the oft-predicted leakage of the weaponry that's being sent to Ukraine is beginning to happen, first in Africa, but maybe ultimately to a bank holdup near us.
No, you're 100% correct. That which many people, including you and myself, have been fearfully predicting is becoming reality. I don't know what the United States, Europe, NATO, and everybody who's been providing weapons to Ukraine was thinking when you hand over without any formal accounting mechanism in place, massive quantities of weaponry. Now, you know, tanks, armored fighting vehicles, artillery pieces, these aren't weapons that are easily transported across borders. Javelin missiles, in-law missiles, Stinger missiles, machine guns, ammunition, grenades, landmines, portable suicide drones, these are. And these weapons have been turned over to the most corrupt nation state in Europe, Ukraine, at a time when the rule of law has ceased to exist. So the corruption has no checks and balance right now. This Ukrainian military is a military that has been taken over by criminal elements, the Azov Battalion, the Idar Battalion, the Safari Unit, the Kraken Battalion. We can go on and on, tens of thousands, even more of these neo-Nazi white supremacist criminal elements whose links aren't to normal governments, but to the underworld, to the black market, to the criminal element. And these are corrupt people who recognize the opportunity they've been given because of the careless behavior of the West to take this man-transportable, this easily transportable free money, and instead of using it as it was intended to fight the Russians, to have it filter back, and now it's appearing on the markets in Africa, it's appearing on the markets in Europe, it's going to appear on every market in the world, and the world has only the United States.
Okay, a different perspective. You can accept or reject it, but at least the CIA isn't impacting us in the information that we give. All other media, it controls. So now you know the truth, that Russia is winning, and Russia is devastating, and they're lying about everything that they're telling you concerning this. Now, why is this important? Why should you care? Because if you're living in a gated community and all you look forward to each day is going out and playing golf, listen to old music on the radio, that's fine. But what do you think happens when the money is no longer there to maintain our basic services, our roads, our highways, our bridges, our tunnels, our levees? What happens when more and more Americans can't even make ends meet, getting week to week? How many millions of senior citizens are not only lonely, but have been abandoned by the rest of society? their needs not met. And now we have no money for them, no money for the 2.5 million homeless children that go to school each day. When they get out of school, they don't have a home to go to. They may have a shelter, or they may be living with their family in a vehicle. And that's what's happening. I filmed this. I've interviewed these people. And yet we have not a penny for them. So the money that is taxpayer money, and the government is printing this just hand over fist, creating a higher inflation. So when you buy something, you're paying more for it. That is due to the government. And it's completely wasteful spending, because none of the money they're spending on the environment will go towards the environment. It'll go to corporations who promised the world. And look at what they promised in the past. Look at what they've delivered. Let me give you one example of this. And I'm going to say goodbye to our WBA audience now instead of in 6 minutes, because I don't want to stop my train of thought on this. Looking at the reality, I mentioned yesterday that the only solution is not Greta Thunberg. Boy, she was here and everywhere, and then her entire movement evaporated into nothingness. All those hundreds of millions of young teenage girls around the world who came out and cheered her as she was, you know, pounding the podium, none of them changed anything. Our consumption of beef has gone up, chicken has gone up, pork has gone up. The amount of plastic we're using has gone up. The amount of clothes we're buying has gone up. The amount of the deforestation has increased. The amount of land that has been destroyed that was wetlands and held water, gone up. So everywhere you look, carbon dioxide has gone up, with the United States, China, and India leading the way by 2 to 2.3%. And yet we're supposed to be at neutral. So they say, let's get rid of all of the polluting industries. Okay, I agree. But do it in a way that makes sense. Do it with some intelligence. Have something in its place that's positive, that can put people to work at a living wage, that is non-polluting, and we haven't done any of that. We've just closed factories, and now that means that people are going to suffer, and we don't care about them. They're not important. But the people who handled the deal are getting the money. That's what they care about. Let me give you one example, and I want to thank this comes from Powerline, from John Hinderbaker on energy policy. Quote, battery storage is a fantasy. Remember what we've been told? You know, Elon Musk and other companies are going to create batteries that can hold long charges. And solar is going to have long charges. So when it's nighttime, the electricity won't be diminished. It's not true. It's a lie. Wind and solar installations produce electricity well under 50% of the time, a fact that will never change. So in a green world that they call green, how do you keep the lights on? Well, battery storage, they tell us. Okay, the electric grid is not a storage device. Electricity on the grid must be consumed in the moment in which it is produced. Amazingly, however, no environmentalist has made any effort to demonstrate that battery storage on the scale needed is possible, let alone affordable. In fact, it's not even remotely possible. Francis Minton has just published a paper on energy storage. Here's a summary. Quote, the main point of the paper is that an electrical grid powered mostly by intermittent generators like wind and sun power requires full backup from some source. And if that source is to be stored energy, the amount of storage required are truly staggering. When you do the simple arithmetic to calculate the storage requirements and the likely cost, it becomes obvious that the entire project is completely impractical and unaffordable. The activists and politicians pushing us towards this new energy system of wind, solar, storage are either being intentionally deceptive or totally incompetent. Thus, for example, consider the case of Germany. The country has gone the farthest of any in the world down the road to energy transition. My report presents two different calculations of the energy storage requirements for Germany in the world of wind and solar grid, and no fossil fuels allowed. One of the calculations by Roger Andrews came to a requirement of approximately 25,000 gigawatts, and the other by two authors named Ruhamna and Weist came to a higher figure of 56,000 gigawatts. The two use similar but not identical methodology and somewhat different assumptions. Clearly, there is a large range of uncertainty as to the actual requirement, but the two calculations cite give a reasonable range for the scope of the problem. Now, here's what's important. And against these projections of a storage requirement in the range of tens of thousands of gigawatts are the Germans' plans as presented in this 20-fold expansion by 2031. In the case of Germany, Wood Mackenzie states that the planned energy storage capacity for 2031, that's, mind you, that's not far away, follows a 20-fold expansion at 8.1 gigawatts. Rather than tens of thousands, it's single digits. How does that stack up in percentage terms against the projected requirements? In other words, in lay language, the amount of energy storage that Germany is planning in just the next 8 to 9 years is between 0.016 to 0.036% of what it actually would need. So they've undermined this by 99%, almost 100%. This does not qualify as a serious effort to produce systems that might work. This absurd situation is duplicated in every other jurisdiction that is purported to mandate wind and solar, for example, in California. The report cites another article from Utility Dive stating that the California Public Utilities Commission has ordered the state's power providers to collectively procure by 2026, that's 3 years from now, 10.5 gigawatts or 42 gigawatts of lithium-ion batteries for grid-scale storage. The additional 10.5 lithium storage capacity, translated to its most about 42, would take California all the way to about 0.17% of the energy storage it would need to fully back up wind, solar generators. This is a joke. There are nowhere near enough batteries in the world to back up the world's needs for electricity, nor will there ever be. So the next time, in my words, not the author's, in my words, the next time someone explains to you that that we need to get rid of all the existing power sources, I agree. We need to get rid of eating meat. We need to get rid of commercial farms. We need to get rid of all the plastic and over-plasticizing everything. We need to get rid of buying all the clothes that we buy and how we dispose of things or repurpose them. We need to stop buying all this stuff and using all this stuff. We've got to stop overexpanding. We need to get people living in environments that are environmentally sound and sustainable. We're doing none of the above. Nothing. We talk about it, we don't do it. And the companies are involved in green energy? No, it's about getting money from the government and corporate interest into their hedge fund, like Al Gore, where they can then have enormous wealth. And yet, where are their batteries? You have to have coal and you have to have gas to back that up. What is powering your electric car when you plug it in at night? Coal and gas. What do you need to make these cars and cell phones and televisions? Coal and gas. So shouldn't you at least be wise enough to say, let us first produce the least toxic to the environment in extracting it, manufacturing it, and then in the utilization of it when it's in force? The answer is yes, we should, but we're not doing it. Where we should be is geothermal, non-polluting, and non-extracting finite supplies, and in wind wave power, and in bladeless wind. But at least the first two, you're not having to destroy the earth in order to so-called save the earth. So just calculation. Ask how many miles would your car, this electric car, have to drive before you offset what it took on exploiting the environment and creating carbon dioxide in the manufacturing of that car. And you'll never be able to drive a car long enough, or a windmill that will last long enough, or solar system that will last long enough? Why is it that no one seems to have enough insight into basic physics and technology to explain this to you?
And the previous program was the Gary Null Show, heard Monday through Friday here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Leonard Lopate at Large. Coming up, it is now 1 p.m.